with episode 556 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and it's kind of funny how sometimes when things end, they just seem to start again.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm actually surprised this week there is no Avengers casting news. How will we get through the episode?
No Avengers casting news, but that doesn't mean that there's no Avengers news at all. You'll get far more than you wished for. Yes. All right, well, this is going to be, as usual, the first show of the week, which means news. And then we will get, in the second show of the week, our top three and bottom three. And then the third show of the week will be our wrap-up. And that means that we have a different disclaimer than usual. Yes, we're trying to change things up a little bit. And that means even down to the disclaimer. I know, everyone was waiting with bated breath for that. But Edmund, what can we say about this news?
What we can say about this news is that we hope it is news to you, and we are enlightening you somewhat, and we may be telling you stuff that maybe you didn't want to hear, but it's a news item. We can't really claim to have spoiled you. You just missed it.
Yeah, and we're finding out at the same time you are. So it's not even we may even be spoiling ourselves. It's just the weird way that this works. You want to be current, you're sometimes going to get spoiled. But regardless, Gary, I think you have the first item here. And I have to say, just before we get too far, there aren't a lot of weeks where we can say that the majority of the news is actually good news. This is a week where I really think there's not that much bad news in this week. Even some of the things that seem like bad news may not be bad news. That's really weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, Gary, if you don't mind.
Oh, I will get on to our current topic. However, I do want to puncture a little pin on your balloon. It wasn't in our news stories, but I did want to include it because I felt it was that important. DC Comics has officially closed their New York City offices after almost 80 years. They're moving everything over to California to focus on entertainment. And it's been a major foothold in the New York City sort of comics industry that the two big guys were always there. Marvel left a few years ago, and now DC has finally followed suit. It's a sad day for New York City comics. It's sort of why so many comics, DC and even Marvel, are based out of New York City, or at least initially were, because the writers and everyone worked there. So I'm not saying this is a fundamental shift, but I have to wonder how much focus New York City will continue to have, or Metropolis, or Gotham, if you want to call it, as they're moving to California, for the offices and stuff. So they had closing ceremonies with a lot of big people, everyone from Steve Ditko to Paul Levitz and several other big comic book guys. But it's sort of the ending of an era for New York City comics.
Really, Gary? I mean, I just got done saying about how there weren't that many things on the news feed that were negative.
John, I made no secret of my affection for DC Comics, and this was important news. I couldn't let it go.
Well, you know what? I have to say, it may be good, given the kind of haphazard way that the whole movie franchise has been spinning out, for them to maybe put a little more emphasis on that, if that's where they want to go. And we've seen how it's worked for Marvel. Of course, they also got bought by a huge conglomerate that kind of knows how to do these things. So, who knows how it works. Yeah. All right. On to the first item on our actual list.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. And DC happens to be controlled by that other movie studio that we don't really want to get into a discussion of, do we?
No.
Exactly.
The new offices are across the street, by the way. Yeah, anyway, we're talking our first news item, or at least official news item, is some news about a new sci-fi series called Incorporated. It has gotten approved for a pilot. It's being produced by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's production company called Pearl Street Films. And it's set somewhat in the future. Not so far off enough we won't recognize it, but enough out for them to take some liberties with developments. And it's about the growing power of corporations in the United States, and how they're starting to take over not only government, but even a lot of the sort of public sector type of environments. As I read this description, it almost seems to me like it's the dystopian future of Continuum without time travel involved. So,
exactly. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a bit gritty and suspenseful. And it's supposed to be about the story of a guy who takes on a new identity to go undercover to both save his wife, as well as, help other people. So it sounds interesting. I know a lot of us who watch Continuum, for example, have been sort of curious to see what the future dystopian corporate world is like a little bit more. And I guess we're somewhat getting our wish by going off on this tangent with this series.
That would be true. I don't know what to say about this really until we get more information, because one thing I can definitely say about sci-fi these days is that you really don't know what you're going to get until you see it.
Yes.
That's for sure. I mean, that's for good and for bad. So yeah. Again, it's not necessarily bad news.
Yes, as Friday nights have been proving recently.
Yes, indeed. Edmund, how about this news? Because you know what? You're the perfect person to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about yet another reason for me to just get on this bandwagon.
Yes, indeed. We do have casting news, of course. But this time, for once, it is for Banshee, where Eliza Dushku, of course, from Buffy, Angel, and Dollhouse, has joined the cast of Banshee as Agent Veronica Dawson, a sexy and shockingly reckless FBI profiler.
Wow, talk about casting out of character.
And we'll be teaming with Sheriff Hood to track down a serial killer if she can overcome her own personal demons. And of course, I've been raving about Banshee. As far as I was realizing, thinking about this, it really has sort of picked up the mantle from Spartacus, being this show that on the surface is all about just over the top violence and, you know, an extraordinary fight choreography and you know, and yes, people taking their clothes off and having sex at appropriately mature moments. But it's also just very well written and acted, so you actually do start caring about the characters, just like you did with Spartacus, and certainly the idea of Eliza Dushku running around with Sheriff Hood in those sort of circumstances does have a certain appeal.
Yeah, I'm wondering if she's going to get as she's going to bear her feelings as much as they do
I can mention that, of course, this past season, Megan Roth from Being Human US was introduced to the cast, but did not follow the trend of everybody deciding that they want to sleep with Sheriff Hood.
Oh, well, you know, I guess they have to change things up a little bit.
Yes. Plus, he was kind of mourning the death of his paramour for the last three seasons, so he was feeling a little depressed for a good part of the season.
Okay, fine. He can be depressed. That's perfectly acceptable.
But we're pretty sure he's going to bounce back now.
Oh, well, hey, you know, it doesn't take a lot to bounce back when you've got a cast like that to help you.
Yes.
Anyway. So now this could be considered bad news for a lot of people who are longtime fans of the show Twin Peaks, and we're looking forward to the revival that has been announced by Showtime. Frankly, I think that this is a matter of interpretation, but I'll go ahead and say that David Lynch put out some news saying that essentially Showtime is not pulling the plug on it, as far as he knows, but after a year and 4 months of negotiations, David Lynch is leaving the production of the Twin Peaks revival. Now, I do want to point something out here, something that isn't necessarily obvious to the to those who maybe read this initially. First of all, Showtime came back and said they're saddened to see David Lynch's statement since they believe they were still negotiating. and quite frankly, knowing David Lynch, they could be still negotiating. He's just on a different timeline than they are. They love the world of Twin Peaks. They want to continue to hold out hope they can bring it back in all its glory with both David Lynch and Mark Frost at its helm. Now, what does that tell me? What that essentially tells me is that everyone else who was involved in this is not walking away. No one has said that they are. In fact, the cast has put out a public appeal to David Lynch to not leave the negotiation table. So that sounds to me like they intend to go forward with or without him.
Yes.
They just would prefer it with him. Now, here's the other clincher that, to me, makes this not bad news. The scripts are already written, folks. The story, the words, everything, all of that stuff is already in place. What David Lynch is leaving over, supposedly, Showtime is apparently not aware of it, but what he's apparently leaving over is the amount of money per episode that has been set aside for the direction for the production of the episodes. It quite frankly isn't enough for him to quote unquote fulfill his vision. Now,
do you mean the budget per episode? Is that what you mean?
Well, his exact words are, "I left because not enough money was offered to do the script the way I felt it needed to be done." Now, that if you translate that into real world speak, and he says here that he's not directing, right? So that tells me it's the amount of money for him to direct the episodes. Which is according to his vision, because it says the way I felt it needed to be done. Now, here's the thing. We all know David Lynch is, unique in a certain sense, in the sense that we don't know what this means he could have been inserting a million things in there that really didn't need to go into it that would have inflated the budget. That's kind of where I'm looking at it and say, does this really mean that the episodes can't be done correctly according to what the script has in it? I'm kind of doubtful of that, actually. Here's the other side of it, and I put this in a post that I put on my Facebook, that what most people are looking for out of this revival is not simply a new Twin Peaks. They're looking for a closure. They're looking for things to be resolved. Otherwise, why would people be so excited that the cast is coming back?
That's true. We know who killed Laura Palmer at this point.
what they want is they want all those dangling plot threads to be resolved, and maybe in a way that kind of propels the whole concept forward from there. Well, I don't know that Lynch would do that. I mean, if the story says that it's supposed to happen, sure, but is it going to be in a way that people actually get it? Maybe not. And there are plenty of directors out there that could take this on and do at least as good a job. And how do I know that? Because the series was not directed completely by David Lynch. Most of the episodes weren't directed by David Lynch. Most of the episodes weren't even half written by David Lynch. So Twin Peaks, as we know it already, is more than simply David Lynch. And that's what I think people need to kind of look at and grasp. That and the fact that, like I said, they're looking for closure. And guess what? The scripts are already there. If closure is in there right now, it's still there. The direction shouldn't change that. In fact, if anything, the direction is going to muddy it up so much, you have no idea what just happened. But for some reason, there was a ceiling fan, a swinging stoplight, and a midget on a horse. And that probably cost a little more money than Showtime was willing to put out there.
You've seen that horse rumor, too?
I have. And I think it was named Caligula. But the main thing here is that, folks, I'm holding out hope. Any fellow Twin Peaks fan, I'm holding out hope. The scripts have been written. Mark Frost apparently is still there because if you read into what Showtime said, they were hoping to have both of them on board, which means David Lynch is holding out, but maybe Mark Frost not so much. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is as big a problem as people think it is, but certainly I think it would be great if he would come back. We want to see the flair in there, right? And I think it would be great if he could reprise his role as Gordon Cole, but maybe not. Edmund, you've been kind of agreeing along here. Are your thoughts similar on this, or were you not really having much skin in this game anyway?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the fact that it's already all been written, and there's certainly no indication. I mean, either from Lynch's past history with when the show was first on, more recently, that he was going to pull, like a True Detective and direct to the entire run. I mean, it's yes, it's a shorter season, but of course a heck of a lot of work to supervise all the episodes. So given the fact he was, I mean, it would be great to have him around to more set the tone, and maybe this is just all an extended or even unintentional negotiating tactic. But I'm like you, where I'm not just automatically assuming, oh, he's not here, it's going to be terrible. So I mean, if they happen to work it out, sure. Of course.
Yeah, I'm not going to be upset if they do work it out. I mean, nobody should kind of take that as my stance on this. But I just think it's premature to get up in arms over the fact that he's not going to be quote unquote directing. For instance, I mean, just throw out there, like Alfonso Cuarón could do a bang up job of this. Not that I know that he would do that, but I mean, there's just plenty of people who could do this.
Yes,
the direction is not the biggest thing about this at all. And frankly, if the scripts have already been written, the Lynchian stuff is already in there. Some stuff might hit the floor, but who knows? Now, this next news, I'm sure that Gary, he put my name next to this before I even had a chance to. And I knew he thought I was going to be in sackcloth and ashes over this. But believe it or not, I'm not. Nina Dobrev is leaving The Vampire Diaries, which is a shock to an awful lot of people because guess what? She's the main character. so how does that work? Quite frankly, it works a few different ways. Number one, she's never been the most popular part of this show. I mean, she's awfully pretty. But after they got rid of Catherine, her sexier, more wild child incarnation on the show, Elena is kind of the whiny part of this show. And there wasn't a whole lot of places for this character to go right now. So I actually feel like this makes sense. What I'm slightly more upset about, I guess you could say, and I'm not even really all that upset about it, it's certainly not whether or not the show can survive without her, because I didn't think this show really needed to go more than another season or two anyway. One more season without her to kind of wrap all the things up. Okay. Maybe just transform into something else. I don't know. kind of create a spin-off of sorts within the show, not unlike what the X-Files tried to do, but there's so many other characters within the ensemble already that could work. What's kind of upsetting slightly about this is that we found out about it now. I would have much rather have found out about it as a shocking turn of events later in the season. This is where the internet occasionally gets spoilery for even fans. I mean, here's the kicker, though. Nina Dobrev put this out on her Instagram. So it's kind of like she told everyone. It wasn't like a PR thing. It was just like the actress basically saying, hey, I rapped on the show. What? You know, so yeah. And she basically comes out and says that she always knew she didn't want to go longer than 6 seasons. So my guess is that they were trying to negotiate an extension of contract based on the show getting renewed.
Yeah.
And she decided not to do it. Now, does that mean that the show itself will end? Maybe it will. And frankly, again, like I said, unless they transform it into something else, maybe it's time. This is just, it's gone on for 6 seasons. And this hasn't been a great season. The last 2 or 3 seasons haven't been nearly as good as the beginning. So kind of like an Alan Ball show, let it go after a while. But there we are. We kind of managed to spin those negatives into a positive, and now let's see if we can spin this positive into a negative. I know there are some websites that would,
yes,
but we're probably not among them. Edmund, why don't you go for this?
Yes. No, this is news about Doctor Who and Stephen Moffat, while chatting with the Radio Times over in the UK, revealed that the BBC has confirmed to him, is the way they phrase it, that Doctor Who has been extended for at least 5 more years. Naturally being very gratified by that. Didn't think it would last 10 years, and to be at 10 and have them in the room talking about the plans for the next 5. It's going to do a minimum of 15 years, and then this is naturally, I'd say, where he's verging into a little bit of hyperbole, saying, I mean, it could do 26, just like the original.
I think that would be hilarious, quite frankly.
Yes.
I think that it would be great if they did 26 seasons,
yeah,
and then canceled it. Intentionally.
I also just wanted to clarify, and also, I mean, this is not confirmed, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean Moffat's going to be there the whole 5 years.
Right.
But, that was my question.
Yeah. No, he's not saying he's been renewed, but the show has been renewed. So, you know, he may be there. He may be there the whole time. He may not, but, they do mention, and I actually hadn't realized this, that it's been under his tenure since Matt Smith and him came in, that the show is actually now making more money in its international markets than it is in its domestic one in the UK. So, yeah, he's kind of expanded the fan base on it.
Well, I think it's a good idea. And honestly, their model with replacing the main characters every few years, does keep the show fresh in a way, even if you sort of, keep the TARDIS walls up, so to speak. So I could definitely see it, going. They seem to have a sense of when it's reaching a bit of a drag and, moving on with different actors and things like that. So I think it's a franchise that they could, continue to push out. At least you don't get oh, we've seen the same guy do the same thing because the doctor keeps regenerating. So I think they could keep going with it. They've taken so many different spins on this series over the years. Everywhere from almost being a government operative to being practically being a loner. There's still several different facets you can go within this structure, which is genius that they sort of have had it set up where you can twist it and go a completely different direction. So.
Yeah, and I think, Edmund, that point was the thing that I think some people took as the negative on this, is that they interpreted that to mean that Moffat would be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I want to see him continue as the producer for the next 5 years. I would hope that he would move on.
Yeah.
For his own sake, I think he needs to work on other things, Sherlock.
Yeah.
At the same time, there needs to be another voice behind it, because part of the reason that Moffat's tenure is kind of maybe not getting the ratings or the praise in the UK that it used to is that he did kind of shift the tone a bit, and it hasn't been to everybody's it hasn't been the favorite shift among everyone out there, let's say.
Yeah.
And that's why I say there are some people who would think that that was the worst news ever if he was going to be the producer for 5 more years. He's certainly going to be for another 1 or 2. And really, I think that sometimes when the new doctor comes in, that's a good time to move on to a new producer. But we'll see how this pans out. I wonder if the fact that the news hasn't been contradicted is actually a pretty good sign that this is the internal belief anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
Show being renewed for 5 seasons? Yeah, I don't think that's actually really going to happen, but there we are. Here's something interesting. despite the fact that it has yet to be officially greenlit, we now have casting news for Tron 3. We learned that the supposed or the planned title for the next Tron film would be Tron Ascension, which as we those of us who enjoyed Legacy enough to actually pay attention to the plot know that that actually makes sense. What also seems to be happening here is that Garrett Hedlund and mm-hmm. Olivia Wilde are going to be returning for it. Remember, it's not yet officially greenlit, but they're signed on for it. And I know that there are an awful lot of people who are going to be happy about that, because you've got essentially the same director, the same producer, now the two of the main leads of the film, of Legacy, rather, coming back for Ascension. And I know that there were a lot of people that liked, in particular, Cora. Maybe not so much Kevin Flynn, or Kevin Flynn's son, rather. But Hedlund did perfectly fine in the role, but I do think that Wilde was kind of the breakaway character in that film. And I think that there are a lot of people that are happy that she's coming back. What are your thoughts, Gary?
This took me a little by surprise. I know Tron did decent numbers, but I was a little surprised that they're going back to the well on this again. Maybe I saw it. I didn't think it really warranted a third movie. But Disney seems to be all about sequels or follow ups as part of their profit mentality. So I think if a movie doesn't bomb, it's almost guaranteed a sequel nowadays. So. I can't say I'm overly excited. I'm not even sure if I'll go to the theater to see it. I'll watch it at some point, but I at this point, I'm not thrilled about hearing it.
Interesting. Yeah, I liked Legacy enough. At least I thought it had potential, and maybe this will be when they actually fulfill that potential, or this may be the production where they show that they should have just left it well enough alone.
Yeah, I was watching the original the other day again, and recently I was like, oh wow, this was fun. But I had more fun watching the original than the second one. So
fair enough. How about this next item here, Gary?
This is actually kind of comic book news, I suppose. Mark Millar's Jupiter's Legacy is headed to the big screen. For people unfamiliar with this original comic book, or at least Mark Millar's version of it, you can kind of think of it slightly as a derivative of DC's Kingdom Come, where you have the older superheroes who were your typical 1950s do-good, upright citizen type of thing. And now you have to deal with their kids who are, treat superherodom like they're rock stars, like Kardashians and things along that. And you reach this sort of generational gap that is explored. But when you're talking about both sides having superheroes, taking the keys away from somebody to use the car isn't quite the same thing, because they can fly. So it does present, sort of a unique view on not only parent relations and stuff like that, but how your idea of what constitutes a superhero changes. So I like the concept. I've liked it as I've seen it presented a few different ways over the years. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, Millar has a very good business model in place right now.
John, that doesn't sound very flattering.
No, I was about to explain, and then you guys laughed. That's not what I meant. But it is a business model, and I don't want that to be lost here. What he tends to do is that he has relatively short miniseries or short-lived series that he takes an idea, he plays with it just enough to kind of really get the seed of it out there and play the strengths of it, really. Not let it linger so long that the good of the idea kind of gets watered down. And then he pushes hard with his production company to sell the rights to it. We've seen it again and again and again with Millar, and frankly, it works for him. And most of the time, the ideas are at least decent enough. I mean, we certainly know that there are people who enjoy Kick-Ass and things like that, which I think is Millar.
Yes.
And we've heard that Birthright is going to be following in these footsteps. And there are a couple other properties that he's got out there that have been adapted. I think Millar was the one behind Kingsman, right? The yes. Secret Service?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Which, again, that was quite frankly, that was a very enjoyable movie for what it was. I mean, it was a great representation of the source material in my mind. But that's the thing, is like even if it's a one-off film, it's not, it doesn't need to have a sequel. Even if it's a one-off, that's a success from a business model perspective, because he gets paid. And that's it's different from what other people are out there to do. But I can't exactly say that I'm upset if he has a comic idea that he only lets run out for, like, you know, 6 to 12 issues before he moves on to the next idea, or, you know, a follow-up idea. You know, he does these short bursts. And what that means is that if there's a dud, it just dies on the vine. It doesn't just linger and keep going and try to justify itself. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But he builds a reputation for being able to put something out and immediately catch it with a hook. And that's what this is. Like you said, Gary, this is not a quote-unquote original idea, but the way that he played it out was still intriguing enough that it's got his stamp on it.
Oh, yeah. No, he definitely, even if he wants to say, offers an homage of an idea, he does take it off into a unique direction typically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, he does have a fairly consistent voice in terms of his work, and I almost always know when it's a Millar work. And I've been reading Jupiter's Legacy. The other problem is that, if there is one problem, is that he has a tendency also to not really keep to a schedule. So issues can kind of trickle out. I don't even know that Jupiter's Legacy is over yet.
I don't think it is.
No. So that's the weird part about it sometimes. But Birthright was the same way. The rights were sold before the last issue out of six went and hit the stands. But there we are. Speaking of comic book news, this was interesting to me. Coming off of the tour de force that was Revolution, Eric Kripke is bouncing back with a comic book miniseries through the Vertigo imprint, which apparently is not dead, and it's called Amped. And it's going to be potentially tied to a television adaptation for USA Network, with Kripke as the runner of that show, apparently, or executive producer. Anyway, when a neurotic family man buys an online smart pill to increase his focus and jolt him out of his slump, he gets much more than he bargained for. To his surprise, the pill gives him incredible strength and power. The project examines both the mighty highs and humiliating lows of being a real-life superhero. Again, not necessarily new idea, but I want to see what Kripke can do. I want to know if Kripke is going to turn out to be the modern-day incarnation of Chris Carter. That's really what I want to see.
Yeah.
Is he a one-hit wonder with Supernatural? Especially as Supernatural teeters on the edge of becoming of following in the X-Files footsteps a little too closely.
Yes.
Let's see if he can pull off something here, or if it's going to turn out that he only has the one thing really to his name. We will find out. Any thoughts on this, guys? Gary, does this sound interesting to you?
It didn't really grab me. No, I can't say that it did. I always try to sort of support the genre, so to speak, but it didn't. It looked to me just like some sort of a promotional stunt for a TV series.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I was actually interpreting it. I mean, I like Kripke, but I do feel like he's on thin ice with me. How about you, Edmund?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the sample cover that got released, it does look like it's okay trying to be one of those more slightly meta, slightly real life, slightly edgy comics. I can't say the general idea was really grabbing me. So I would say certainly in my case, it's one of those wait and see what some of the reaction is and then see if I want to pick it up.
Hmm. Exactly. Is it just going to be, is it going to rise above the noise or is it not? Is it just going to be mediocre? That's really my thought here. We shall see. We shall see. All right. Next on the list, I believe, is Gary.
Yes. In Hollywood's constant pattern lately to mine the past for as much money as possible, they're talking about remaking Logan's Run. However, this time around, they're going to put a little bit of a twist into it. Now the age is not 30 anymore, it's 21. And the Sandman is going to be portrayed by a woman. I'm not adverse to this at all. The dropping down to 21 seemed a little bit, I guess, expected in this day and age. But it took me by surprise. I'm wondering what mall they'll shoot this one in. But no, all things said and done. It is a nice story about youth having to come to terms with not only becoming adults and in some sense entering another world, as well as the portrayal that just because you're old doesn't you can still be of use, not just thrown away. And maybe the youth of today sort of needs that reminder that youth isn't always all it's cracked up to be. So I like the twist on it. I think it could definitely use it. I guess, you know, we have seen several female law enforcement characters before. So, you know, it doesn't strike me. I know it's a model that works. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, we can't deny either the effects of the, you know, the Hunger Games series or the Divergent series with female main characters. And, you know, I don't doubt that they're also, you know, feeling that when they announce the gender change.
Yeah, Edmund, if maybe you can correct my memory on this, mm-hmm. but didn't the original story for Logan's Run, wasn't the age closer to 21 than 30?
Was it?
My memory is, yeah, it's very strong with it that, yeah, it was 30. I mean, you know, it was
for the film, but I'm talking about the original story.
Oh, the TV series I didn't see enough of to remember.
No, it came from an actual book, yeah. And now I'm going to look it up.
You could be right, John. I just remember I thought the movie was 30.
The movie, I believe, was 30, but yeah. I think it was the original story was younger, and they actually aged up for the movie because of the casting.
Right.
Because at the time, they never would have thought that somebody that young would have made for a logical... Okay, so yes, in the original book, it was 21 years to the day.
Oh, okay.
Is going back to the source material, perhaps. And for a long time, Bryan Singer was attached to the remake of this movie, and I don't know if he still is. It sounds like it's up for grabs. But
no, I believe he's off it.
Yeah, I'm completely with you, Gary. I think that this is they wanted to do this for a while now, and maybe they think that the hook to redo this is to capitalize by going back to the 21-year-old thing and therefore have a younger protagonist, but capitalize on the Hunger Games and Divergent,
mm-hmm.
Especially since Divergent as a franchise is not doing as well as they had hoped.
Yeah,
the second movie apparently flopped against expectations. So, yeah, I mean, they definitely want another Katniss Everdeen out there, and why not this? In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to get someone on the level of Jennifer Lawrence to be in the film.
You know, another aspect of this is the whole sort of hedonism aspect of the I forget what they call their city that they lived in, but you know, there's that aspect too. And you know, while we were sort of focusing on the ageism of it, you know, they could go the other way too, showing how, you know, people, you know, that they sort of rot and decay in this, you know, perfect society where, you know, they never have to want for anything for mm-hmm. the short time they live. So I think they could go a few different ways with this plot line, even within the existing structure. So we'll have to see.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, certainly with that the move towards darker fare, certainly since the original came out, they could do some interesting commentary on on youth just completely distracted by whatever media was being thrust at them, et cetera. All staring into their tablets and things, but
well, you know, Gary, you kind of got into the hedonism part of it, and quite frankly, one of the things that I was always curious about for a remake of Logan's Run was that. Even the very slight kind of divergence into that they did in the original film was considered a bit, I guess, risque. But that would be nothing these days. I mean, that would be like, you know, roll your eyes kind of thing. So my question would be, how far do they take this now? And that could be pretty dicey material, especially if they go for younger.
That's true.
And so that's kind of the interesting thought. It's like if they did this right, if they did this according to the novel and according to the kind of the ideas behind it, there would probably be a lot of people that would feel very uncomfortable about it. And that would be probably the right way to go then. You know, change things up, shake it up a little bit, which is kind of the whole point of the story in the first place. All right. Who's up next? I think, Gary, you're up again already. But this is, again, good news.
Oh, geez, I'm getting worked hard tonight. Yes, one sec. Brad Bird has confirmed that he will be writing The Incredibles 2. I don't know about you, but I've always felt that this franchise, unlike some franchises, actually had a lot of legs to go, you know, a lot further. We barely got a glimpse into this world before we had to deal with Mr. Incredible and his arch enemy sort of defeating each other. But there was a whole other world out there. The sort of idea that heroes had to go underground and were not only forced to do so by the government, but compensated and had their actions covered up for by the government. That alone would strike me as a very interesting plot to explore a little bit more. We got to see a few heroes, you know, like Frozone and the rest of the Incredibles family, but there were, they mentioned many more. Several died, but you got the sense that this was a rather large population. So I'm really looking forward to it. I personally don't want it to be a flashback movie. I'd rather deal with the here and now so we could get the family involved more in it rather than just other heroes. But we'll have to see. They announced this all the way back in March of 2014, and Brad Bird just announced recently that he's starting to write it. So that would seem like a really large stretch of time between announcement and actual start of the project. But a lot of people want to see this, including myself, so I'm really looking forward to it. Brad Bird has been busy, though. He wrote the Tomorrowland movie that'll be coming out later in May with George Clooney. So it's not that he hasn't been busy, but I'm glad to hear he's finally is starting this project.
Yeah. My read on this is that they made the announcement because they needed to lock in a certain period of time for him to work on this. And then they just had to wait out his schedule.
Yeah.
That seems to happen a lot these days, and that, you know, that's one factor that seems to often get left out when people are wondering why they, you know, put certain movies on a certain time slot or release date and then line things up. It's because in many ways they need to promise people that they have work, especially like a star for a film. They want to make sure that that person knows that they're, you know, what period of time they're going to be needed, because they may be otherwise, paid for bigger jobs or other jobs. Can you imagine, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange? He's in demand. You need to lock in a certain period of time for that. So at any rate, speaking of Marvel,
yes,
Edmund, here's some news that I think shocked some people, but boy, would I feel like finally vindication of my theory.
Yes. And this would be news out of Marvel and ABC that even though they have not yet told us if we're going to have a season 3 of S.H.I.E.L.D. or even a season 2 renewal for the limited series Agent Carter, they have apparently already started developing an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spin-off series. Too much information yet, saying that they were not going to go the backdoor pilot route, but it would be based on a story arc featured in the remaining season 2 episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. So certainly with all the stuff that's been introduced with Real S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Inhumans and Gordon and the school and et cetera, you know, there's certainly any number of avenues now that they could be developing coming out of what we've just been seeing. So that's certainly setting up some interesting possibilities there.
I don't need to see Almost on a Carrier again. I've gone through that already.
Yes. New Triskelion is where it's going to be set. But
okay.
Please somebody tell me you got that. Anyway, I'm obviously excited about this news. Like I said, this validates my theory that the reason that ABC and Marvel and Disney and everyone has essentially not been freaking out at all at the ratings for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is because they really don't care. This is to them a show that it's brand recognition. It's basically keeping the awareness out there in the public, even if it's just a little bit. But Disney is notorious for this. Disney is notorious for basically maintaining public presence and constantly hammering them with stuff within their view, you know, rebranding things that have been around forever as, you know, the Disney Princess line, for instance. I mean, they literally had to do nothing, and yet they revitalized an entire sector of their of the Disney brand in just a few words. And for me, this is the same thing where they're like, you know, they've announced they're going to have an animated Avengers series that we didn't talk about, but they are going to, that ties into the MCU. So they're basically just expanding this almost in Star Wars-esque fashion, which makes perfect sense for Disney, right? So for them, I mean, yeah, it matters, but it doesn't, because ABC it doesn't hurt them to have an hour or two a week devoted to maintaining visibility on one of their biggest cash cows in the film part of their business.
The wide world of Disney.
Yeah. Wide world of Marvel, it might as well be. Yeah. You know, same thing. They own the network. So what? I mean, it really isn't going to hurt them to do this. And it's not like basically they compare it to the ratings of many other shows on the networks these days. And they go, you know what? It's not that much worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really losing us any money because, well, the franchise isn't hurting for it right now. So now if the franchise were barely limping along, I would expect this to not even get a second season. But what this tells me is that they're looking to just make, you know, basically ABC. I could see that it turning into like the main Disney network. And they just put their own stuff on the network, and it just becomes one network out of the portfolio that they have. Because this kind of stuff won't go on like Disney XD or the Disney Channel. They've got completely different demographics for that. But ABC as a whole, there's shows that they keep on for I mean, like Grey's Anatomy doesn't get nearly the ratings that it used to, but they keep it on because it caters to a certain part of their audience.
Well, yeah, and they need to keep the producer happy. But
well, yeah, well, her entire portfolio
exactly
is basically a TV franchise.
Yeah.
But yeah, this obviously to me was just like proof positive. Yes, clearly they see this as just part of a whole. It's not an isolated show. And between this and the stuff going on Netflix and everything else, they're just happy to keep the brand recognition out there and keep the momentum going. And really what they're saying is that they feel like the more that things tie into all these films coming out going forward, the more that they can expand the universe. Good for them. This says nothing, by the way, to anyone who may be worried that Agent Carter won't come back. Because if they do anything like they did this season with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they could potentially now have two shows that have a mid-season hiatus. What are they going to fill that with?
Mm-hmm.
It could be another season of Agent Carter. It could be a mini-series on something else. You never know. You never know. All right. Now, meanwhile, we have this other news out there. Speaking of both Bryan Singer and Marvel, Gary.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We haven't left the Marvel Universe just yet. We're talking about the upcoming X-Men film, X-Men Apocalypse. Bryan Singer has confirmed that the character known as Angel is being cast for the movie. However, if you're expecting feathers, you're going to be sadly disappointed. The version of Angel that he's talking about is the version that was changed by Apocalypse to become one of his horsemen known as Death. This ends up him being replaced with large metal wings that have been grafted onto him after his natural wings were cut off. So it was I'm not sure how they're going to portray it, but it was a very dark character that Angel had become much no more no caring playboy type of character, but rather someone who has had his life taken away from him and forced into service under Apocalypse. So it was never a high point of Angel's career for me. However, it was very defining for his character. It definitely sort of made him have to deal with things that he never had to before. I'm sort of looking forward to it. And the way it's portrayed, I almost could see him as a Wolverine substitute. His metal wings were often able to shoot off metal feathers that acted as knives to attack people. So we'll have to see. But it's definitely hints as to a much darker movie in case we weren't expecting it.
Yeah. Oh, I think we all were expecting it. I'm looking forward to it. The Apocalypse and his horsemen storyline from the early X-Factor days, way back in the 80s, was some of my favorite material, especially the Angel to Archangel.
90s, John? 90s, sorry.
No, I think that was late 80s. But maybe I'm misremembering.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter.
No. Back then.
Yeah, back then. Way back then. Regardless, this is good news to me. It's funny. We were talking, I guess, about Logan's Run. I wouldn't be surprised, considering that Hugh Jackman has been kind of waffling on what the direction is for him and Wolverine. On the one hand, he says that you know his tenure is ending. On the other hand, he says basically he'll be happy playing Wolverine till the day he dies. So one of those is true. Or somewhere in the middle, who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if when Jackman finally goes that they decide that instead of recasting Wolverine, they kill him off and replace him with X-23, the much younger female version in the comics.
Well, you know, they have killed him off in the comics and kept him dead for several months now. So,
yes.
Hey, much longer than the previous deaths. So.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, this next film is going to be the last one for quite a few people on the cast. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But I like this idea of a darker storyline. Now, this last piece here is really interesting because this just goes, boy, we've been following this for a while. And this is one of those stories that just seems to be a perfect example of what development hell is. And that is, The Dark Tower movie and TV series has been resurrected from the dead by Sony and MRC. Yes, the long gestating combination big and small screen adaptation of The Dark Tower has found new life thanks to Sony Pictures Entertainment and MRC. I don't know who those are, but okay. They're apparently going to co-finance the hugely ambitious magnum opus. The new script is primarily based on the first book in the series. Well, no kidding. The latest one is co-written by Akiva Goldsman and Jeff Pinkner. Now, those are pretty well-known names. I do like how under Goldsman, this is like the slippery slope of script writing. A Beautiful Mind, Batman and Robin, The Da Vinci Code. But then we have Jeff Pinkner, who was, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Fringe, and Lost. Pinkner has been involved with a lot of Abrams stuff, but also a lot of the stuff that is in that weird kind of incestuous in between between the Whedon stable and the Abrams stable, mm-hmm. because Drew Goddard has been in both, and Goddard was kind of part of this whole Amazing Spider-Man attempted franchise. By the way, also the one who is kind of show running Daredevil. Just goes to show, sometimes it all depends on who you're working for. Anyway, this thing has been totally reconceived by Goldsman and Pinkner from the version that had been previously developed by Ron Howard and all of his folks. And I guess Ron Howard is still involved, though, which is what's really strange about this. This is basically Ron Howard and his friends kind of repitching the same thing with a different version of it. So, you know, Stephen King is, of course, happy to have this happen if it does. It's kind of crazy. It's what it is. But boy, they really want to make this happen. And this is resurrected yet again, because I really felt like, and I think even Edmund, I think at one point you had kind of theorized that this was dead in the water now.
Yeah, it certainly seemed to be. So yeah, I mean, having this sort of turnaround, I think given the fact that Ron Howard is still involved to some extent, I think this is one of those rare cases where it's like, yeah, somebody with a lot of Hollywood pull, after getting turned down the first time, was like, no, I'm just going to keep working on this. And fingers crossed that it actually works out this time.
I think it would be interesting to see that adapted finally. But we shall find out. Gary, any thoughts on this other than this is off? Really, at this point, just give it to Disney. They seem to have this whole idea of TV and movies mixing together down pretty pat at this point.
You know, I was trying to remember who MRC is because it sounded familiar. And I think it is a Chinese company. But, you know, this in general points to a few things for me is that as Sony needs to start pairing up with people, Sony never needed to pair up with people. You know, the Sony as a corporation is going through a very bad time right now. Their appliances that they manufacture are tanking. Samsung's killing them. They've just had to give up Spider-Man. They couldn't quite get it right under pressure from Marvel as well. It wouldn't surprise me that they are actually going back and looking at stuff that they could, you know, sort of reanimate and bring back to life that, you know, that they can make money on. I think they're going back to the files, so to speak, to see what they do have that they can work with.
Hmm. Yeah, it certainly what it sounds like to me, and this is, there's two kind of takeaways for me is that number one, Gary, you've mentioned this many times. I like this, this focus that there seems to be on the international market versus simply the domestic market. This seems smart to me that if they partner up with someone in China, that they could make this more of an international type of thing than simply, you know, where they were going before. That's probably a savvy move. The other thing that this kind of tells me is that where would be the perfect small screen place for them to go if Sony's partnering up with us? Maybe this is something that they're looking for to bolster what is so far a fairly slim slate for their PlayStation TV franchise or whatever. I mean, after Powers, I don't know what else is coming. This may be on that slate, so they may be trying to slowly do what Netflix is doing and be competitive in that market. But we'll see. I mean, it's just a couple thoughts there that more and more I think we're going to see that the international investment in television series that eventually get distributed here, which used to be more the norm and or the exception to the rule and a dangerous one, in fact, when you've got situations like Farscape, that as soon as one piece of that international conglomerate or coalition left, the whole thing fell apart. China may be the East at least, may be a really good place to go these days for investment because that's kind of where it's at right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, the United States is not the largest entertainment market anymore. So, yeah, they have to take that into consideration. Look at even some of the regional versions they did of Captain America from on the Marvel side, where they were changing lists on what Steve Rogers was, doing for his checklist of things to find out. They changed it regionally depending on what market was playing in. They are playing every market nowadays. And, I think America accounts for about 40% of their market, and international is 60% now. That's, that's not that it's unheard of anymore, but definitely that wasn't the norm, say, 15 years ago. So, we are a big market, but not the only one.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I like this idea of exposing even folks domestically to a different flavor if they're, not just tailoring things to us, like you said, and then localizing is a really savvy way to do it. Any thoughts on this, Edmund, before we wrap up?
No. Well, I mean, I'm not that familiar with it. I'm not familiar with the original material, but certainly, I mean, that if Gary's right, it is a Chinese company. I mean, actually makes even more sense in terms of why it got revived.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that is it for the news this week, and that means that we're going to wrap up this first show. And next time, we're going to get into our top and bottom three shows for the week. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.